have at the University of Colorado Boulder. And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Dr. Zom Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con alguien.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Downderry, and I'm an infectious diseases specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Hope Pickerson, and I'm a health education specialist and reporter. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician,
that's me, and a health education expert,
that's me, talk about what you need to know about COVID-19 as well as community and public health.
For more information about Noise Filter, your public health podcast, to watch and share our incredible informative animations, visit us at noisefiltershow.com.
So let's get started. Cheap antidepressant could be used for COVID treatment. The New York Times reports that a large clinical trial conducted in the US, Canada, and Brazil has found that a cheaply made antidepressant could be a promising treatment for COVID-19. The drug called fluvoxamine was found to reduce the need for hospitalization by 1/3 of Brazil and 2/3 in a study at large. Some patients involved in the study struggled to handle the dosage, so more research is needed to properly titrate the treatment, but early results have been promising. One patient given fluvoxamine died, while 12 patients given the placebo died.
The studies on fluvoxamine thus far have focused on how effective the drug is at reducing the need for prolonged hospitalization, and most of the patients involved have been unvaccinated. So we're not sure yet how the treatment could affect the inoculated if the treatment were to seek approval. Federal guidelines would require a larger trial.
If fluvoxamine were to be approved, it could be huge for global equity regarding COVID. The drug is already used to treat obsessive compulsive disorder, so it would be easy for doctors to prescribe off-label without struggling for access to supply. It's also cheap, which could help treat COVID in poor countries.
Lockdown for unvaccinated people in Austria. Last month, Austria imposed a lockdown on people unvaccinated against COVID-19. The lockdown is aimed to prevent unnecessary travel for those who aren't vaccinated, but they still have the ability to travel for essential purposes. The move is in response to a steep rise in COVID-19 cases. The increase in cases is being seen all across Europe, and with winter and the holidays approaching, people fear case numbers will even get worse. Currently, Europe is in the epicenter of the virus, accounting for more than half of new cases globally, according to a Reuters tally from the second week of November. Austria is reporting a new case rate of 760 per 100,000 people. This is double the rate from late October. Other countries have not mentioned taking the steps Austria has, but seem to either be tightening restrictions in other ways or keeping their current regulations while increasing pushes to get vaccinated. Austria has declared its residents who are unvaccinated that will be under lockdown. Currently, the vaccination rate in Austria is about 65%. Those who are unvaccinated are allowed to travel for certain purposes like going to work or essential shopping. Verifying vaccination status and desired destination will be extremely difficult and rather hard to enforce. Officials say the hope is to use this as a way to encourage unvaccinated people to get vaccinated, not to lock down unvaccinated people. Officials are wary of rising numbers of cases while people remain unvaccinated. There is considerable pushback for vaccine from the Freedom Party, which occupies about one third of the parliament. They are planning to protest the country's new restrictions. COVID vaccines provide more immunity than past infection. The CDC recently published a study that confirmed that vaccination against COVID-19 provides stronger protection than immunity from previous infection with coronavirus. The study looked at more than 7,000 people hospitalized for COVID-like illness and found that those who were unvaccinated but had a previous case of the illness were five times more likely to have a confirmed case of COVID than people who were fully vaccinated and had not had COVID before. Researchers looked at people hospitalized with COVID symptoms in 187 hospitals across nine states from January to September, a period that included both the Alpha and Delta variants. Patients were included if they had a previous case of COVID in the past 3 to 6 months or who had been fully vaccinated with either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine in the past 3 months. Of the total 6,328 fully vaccinated people in the study, only 324 or 5.1% tested positive for the virus. And the second group of 1,020 unvaccinated but previously infected people, 89 or 8.7 tested positive for the virus. Previous research has shown that hybrid immunity or natural immunity from a previous infection plus vaccine-induced immunity leads to particularly robust protection, which is just another reason why people who have been previously infected should get vaccinated. Healthy lifestyle gifts to give this holiday season. Now listen, it's been a tough year for many people. Times are challenging living during a pandemic and dealing with all that comes with it. Getting the right gifts to boost health, wellness, and lifestyle would be a great pick-me-up for this holiday season. Waiting too long to order holiday gifts can be an additional stressor, so no harm in working on it sooner rather than later. So here are some healthy lifestyle gift suggestions. A hands-free neck and shoulder massager can provide a phenomenal relief after a day of working on a computer or other type of work that leads to a strained neck. The hands-free massager can provide a much-needed relief and remove tension from the neck, improving posture. Coloring books are a great way to reduce stress. Coloring and drawing are great de-stressors for adults, and there are some wonderful coloring books out there for adults. This is a great gift to help someone de-stress, maybe even pick up a new hobby. A personal journey could be a great outlet for expressive writing, which is linked to many positive health benefits. Expressive writing can help reduce anxiety, reduce depression, and improve memory. How about soap for a relaxing bubble bath? Warm bubble baths have lots of health benefits. It can be a great way to relax, and when done before bed, it's even linked to better night's sleep. Nice soaps and salts for a bubble bath can push it the extra mile to make it that much more relaxing and enjoyable. If you have anyone in mind that runs or cycles long distances, then a hydration vest can be a great gift for them. They hug the body and are the least bulky option for long distance runners and cyclists to take with them. Staying hydrated during long exercises like these is extremely important. A lightweight refillable water bottle with insulation is a great gift for anyone. They can keep your drinks hot or cold. They're easy to clean and help reduce consumption of plastic. I've noticed when I carry mine around, I'm more inclined to fill it up and stay hydrated since it serves as a constant reminder to drink more water. A yoga mat is a simple gift that can encourage anyone to get a little bit more active. Stretching and yoga have plenty of physical benefits and serve as stress reducers as well. getting a yoga mat can be the fuel your loved one needs to add a quick stretch or pose to their morning routine and help them start their day off on the right foot. How about a heated blanket, a weighted blanket, or a white-nosed machine? All of these products are very popular when it comes to sleeping better and relaxing. One of these items may be the missing piece you need to get a better night's sleep. Perhaps the gift of an ergonomic keyboard or blue light glasses. Plenty of people are saying that these are great additions to work from home. Comfort is the key for those long days in front of the computer. Diet-related illness and COVID-19. For a long time, we've been aware of how underlying health conditions can impact COVID-19 infections. Studies have come out showing that the connection between obesity and other diet-related illnesses and COVID-19 cases. Take, for instance, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of Britain, who was in the ICU with a severe case of COVID-19. Afterwards, he commented on how his weight impacted his illness. Johnson took this as a wake-up call to become healthier and to tackle the issue of obesity.
He led a campaign which included mandating nutrition labels on foods in restaurants, having healthier foods near checkout aisles, and blocking junk food advertisements on TV before 9 p.m. Johnson began leading a healthier lifestyle, adopting new healthier habits, and encouraging British citizens to do the same. Other countries are following suit and implementing tighter restrictions around junk food and are encouraging healthy behaviors. Countries are looking to ban or reduce sales of sugary drinks and other junk foods in children.
Dream with me, Hope, that we would ever come to a place like this. Like, I'm looking at this and I'm just like so envious, you know, because in the U.S. there are no big legislative moves. Can you imagine banning advertisements of junk food before 9? Like, dream with me.
I can't dream because that would never happen here.
In the U.S., there have been no big legislative moves addressing the link between diet, obesity, and severe COVID-19. Research shows that obesity is driven by systemic issues and our current food systems, not due to quote-unquote willpower. Prevention is very important, as research shows that most people don't have access to long-term and rigorous treatments to reverse obesity long-term. Diet-related illnesses are an epidemic in America, impacting many, many people.
Research has estimated that diet-related illnesses were comorbidities in 2/3 of hospitalizations for COVID-19. Those who have a BMI of 45 or more are 1/3 more likely to be hospitalized for COVID and 60% more likely to die from COVID. My goodness. It's clear how important this issue is and should receive more focus and legislative action. For now, it is up to us to make the best choices for ourselves to protect our health and well-being. And why do you think that is, Dr. Derry? Like, why do you think there isn't the focus in legislative action? I don't understand it.
I think that there's this perspective of, and I think it's a misguided perspective of what personal freedom means. And I think that because of this highly individualistic approach that our American society takes, I think that runs counter to that, despite it being for your well-being. For example, do you have the freedom to get in your car and drive without a seatbelt? Well, yes, you do, but you could get a ticket as a result of it, right? So we've realized that mandating seatbelts are helpful. Do you have the freedom to go to a bar to get drunk? Yes. Do you have the freedom to get in a car and drive after that? No. We've realized. So there are things that we have decided as a society that we can limit due to personal safety or public health safety. But this is an example where that's not the case. I mean, take the vaccinations that we're seeing all over the country. We're seeing, you know, mandates being reversed. We're seeing in so-called red states where political leaders are not taking vaccinations seriously, even though we know it is for the health of the community. They're putting the priorities of our so-called individualistic or autonomous society above the public's health.
It's unbelievable, honestly.
Yeah. Tonga sees its first COVID case. The oceanic island nation of Tonga saw its first COVID case at the end of October. According to NPR, the case arose following a flight into the nation from Churchill, New Zealand. A Mormon missionary on the flight tested positive upon arrival and was quarantined in a hospital. Churchill has been COVID-free for some months now, but saw some cases crop up following the outbreaks in Auckland, New Zealand. New Zealand health officials said that the traveler to Tonga was vaccinated and tested negative for COVID before the flight into the country.
Tonga is in a unique situation in terms of pandemic management. Like many oceanic nations, its remote location kept it COVID-free for a long time, but the health infrastructure is not equipped to handle a widespread outbreak. In nearby Fiji, there were very few cases until April of this year when the Delta variant infected more than 50,000 residents.
Around 30% of Tongans are fully vaccinated, but almost half the adults in the country have at least gotten one dose. Following the news of the case, Tongans have rushed to get vaccinated at the nation's available sites, and the country has enacted a strict lockdown.
Hope for malaria prevention. The goal set to reduce malaria incidence and mortality by 2030 seemed unlikely to be met at current rates of progress. COVID-19 had a devastating effect on malaria control by delaying prevention measures designed to combat seasonal peaks in disease transmission. However, even with concerns about pandemic setbacks, recent results of clinical trials offer some hope for reinvigorating the malaria response.
According to The Lancet, a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine in August showed a striking reduction in malaria when chemo prevention was combined with vaccination against malaria. The study consisted of about 6,000 children aged 5 to 17 months who were randomly assigned to the different intervention groups, and they were followed for 3 years. The primary outcome was incidence of uncomplicated clinical malaria.
Overall, there are about 1,661 cases of malaria in the chemo prevention alone group, 1,540 in the vaccine alone group, and 624 in the combined intervention group. These incidences equated to protective efficacies of 63% and 60% for the combination group versus chemo prevention alone and vaccination alone. Compared with either intervention alone, the protective efficacies of the combination against hospital admission for severe malaria and against death from malaria were at least 70%.
Two other preliminary clinical trials testing different combinations of drugs versus vaccines alone are also proving promising. The combination intervention seems the most likely candidate for routine implementation, but whether protective efficacy sustained over several years or which intervention is appropriate in settings of year-round endemic transmission are unknown.
Malaria is a disease that is treatable and preventable if only there were consistent access to drugs, bed nets, and insecticides to the people in places that need them. Although we're still dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, politicians and policymakers must not forget about the goals to minimize and hopefully eliminate another deadly disease like malaria for good.
Yes, indeed. Experts worry testing requirement will impede Merck and Pfizer treatments. Merck and Pfizer's antiviral drugs are expected to receive emergency use authorization soon. These pills are cheap to make and have shown some efficacy in reducing hospitalization due to COVID. The New York Times reports that the FDA will likely require a positive COVID test to receive a prescription for the medication. And some experts worry that the U.S. testing infrastructure isn't solid enough to sustain this. The medications work by decreasing the viral replication of COVID. They are intended to be used as soon as possible after symptoms of the virus appear. This means that a timely COVID test result is essential to effective treatment, and America has struggled with testing quite a few times throughout the pandemic. In some cases last year, Americans waited a full week for test results, and many at-home rapid tests sold out widely as the federal government mandated regular testing for unvaccinated workers. In the UK, where the Merck pill has already been authorized, the requirement for a prescription of treatment is any positive COVID diagnostic test. The US is expected to be as flexible, but there is a chance that regulators will require a particular type of test, and each comes with shortcomings. PCR tests, which tend to be more accurate, can take as long as 5 days to return results. Rapid antigen tests yield results in as little as 15 minutes, but are more prone to false positives. Rapid tests are also in a much shorter supply across the nation, though the shortage is expected to ease up soon. While the cheap cost and easy administration of the antiviral pills will likely make them far more accessible than COVID treatments like monoclonal antibody treatments, some experts worry that Americans can't afford to buy a test or can't reach a testing site will be shut out. Some groups have pushed to allow non-physicians to provide pills at testing sites and to ease the requirements to receive the treatment.
memory problems affecting COVID patients. Unfortunately, the term COVID long hauler is now a part of our vernacular because of the coronavirus. Some people experience lasting effects from COVID-19, which can include memory loss. A new study showed cognitive impairments can be present over 7 months after infection.
According to NBC News, researchers at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai conducted a study which adds to the growing evidence that COVID long haulers can experience a myriad of ailments weeks and months after recovering from the initial illness. As many as 24% of people who recovered from COVID-19 continue to experience some sort of cognitive difficulties, including problems with memory, multitasking, processing speed, and focusing.
The research, which was published in JAMA Open Network, included 740 patients who tested positive for the coronavirus between April 2020 and May 2021 and had no history of dementia. Results showed a relatively high rate of cognitive impairment 7.6 months after patients had contracted the disease. The most common cognitive deficit affecting nearly 1 in 4 patients was a problem with storing new memories, followed by issues with memory recall. Other challenges reported were deficits in processing speed and executive functioning, which includes the ability to initiate, plan, organize, and make judgments.
At Northwestern Medical Center, some COVID patients ended up with severe cognitive deficits that they could not care for themselves, especially after being discharged, said neurologist Dr. Igor Kolonik, chief of the Division of Neuroinfectious Diseases and Global Neurology. Even young patients who had a mild case of the disease reported cognitive difficulties.
Wow, wow. Dr. Helen Nevesky, a professor of psychiatry and director of the UCLA post-COVID clinic, said, seeing severe mental deficits in patients in their 20s, 30s, and 40s is heartbreaking. Some patients say they cannot function, they can't think, their memory is impaired, they get confused when they drive places, and they don't know how they got there.
While most people who've been infected with COVID recover within weeks, Dr. Levetsky says 20 to 30% of people infected will have prolonged reaction and lingering symptoms. The biggest thing you can do to protect yourself from potentially going through something like this is to get vaccinated and continue with prevention practices like hand washing, social distancing, and wearing a mask. Healthy lifestyle gifts to give this holiday season. Now listen, it's been a tough year for many people. Times are challenging living during a pandemic and dealing with all that comes with it. Getting the right gifts to boost health, wellness, and lifestyle would be a great pick-me-up for this holiday season. Waiting too long to order holiday gifts can be an additional stressor, so no harm in working on it sooner rather than later. So here are some healthy lifestyle gift suggestions. A hands-free neck and shoulder massager can provide a phenomenal relief after a day of working on a computer or other type of work that leads to a strained neck. The hands-free massager can provide a much-needed relief and remove tension from the neck, improving posture. Coloring books are a great way to reduce stress. Coloring and drawing are great de-stressors for adults, and there are some wonderful coloring books out there for adults. This is a great gift to help someone de-stress, maybe even pick up a new hobby. A personal journey can be a great outlet for expressive writing, which is linked to many positive health benefits. Expressive writing can help reduce anxiety, reduce depression, and improve memory. How about soap for a relaxing bubble bath? Warm bubble baths have lots of health benefits. It can be a great way to relax, and when done before bed, it's even linked to better night's sleep. Nice soaps and salts for a bubble bath can push it the extra mile to make it that much more relaxing and enjoyable. If you have anyone in mind that runs or cycles long distances, then a hydration vest can be a great gift for them. They hug the body and are the least bulky option for long distance runners and cyclists to take with them. Staying hydrated during long exercises like these is extremely important. A lightweight refillable water bottle with insulation is a great gift for anyone. They can keep your drinks hot or cold. They're easy to clean and help reduce consumption of plastic. I've noticed when I carry mine around, I'm more inclined to fill it up and stay hydrated since it serves as a constant reminder to drink more water. A yoga mat is a simple gift that can encourage anyone to get a little bit more active. Stretching and yoga have plenty of physical benefits and serve as stress reducers as well. Getting a yoga mat can be the fuel your loved one needs to add a quick stretch or pose to their morning routine and help them start their day off on the right foot. How about a heated blanket, a weighted blanket, or a white-nosed machine? All of these products are very popular when it comes to sleeping better and relaxing. One of these items may be the missing piece you need to get a better night's sleep. Perhaps the gift of an ergonomic keyboard or blue light glasses. Plenty of people are saying that these are great additions to work from home. Comfort is the key for those long days in front of the computer. Spots in nursing schools are declining while the demand for nurses rises. Across America, hospitals are experiencing the debilitating staffing shortages of nurses, especially in short-term and emergency care. These hospitals are trying all that they can to grow and retain staff, such as offering loan repayment incentives and handing out job offers before some nursing students have even graduated. But as the need for nurses rise, the number of spots available in nursing schools has decreased. A piece from the NPR says that this is due to a few reasons.
First, nursing schools don't have enough educators to go around. Even though instructors at nursing schools are expected to have advanced degrees, they make almost half of what similarly qualified nurses in hospitals earn. So the jobs aren't very attractive to qualified candidates. In fact, many nursing teachers had to leave their positions to work at hospitals due to the financial strain of the pandemic. One survey in California found that nursing schools in the state lost 30% of their faculty since the pandemic began.
Second, COVID-19 restrictions on hospitals have prevented a lot of nursing students from gaining access to the training they need. This means that some students get a slot in a nursing school, but can't get the clinical training they need to graduate or even complete their program. Wow. Nursing instructors also tend to be in their 50s and 60s, and many of them are retiring without any replacement to fill those slots.
Wow. In addition to the exacerbated competition for slots in nursing schools, students who are interested in pursuing nursing often find they can't afford the programs at all. Hospitals are trying to help mitigate some of these barriers to nursing school by offering more scholarships and loan repayment programs. Wow, this is just a bad situation getting worse, it seems like.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
What is America's long-term COVID-19 goal? Now, we've been dealing with COVID-19 pandemic for what feels like a decade, but in reality, it's really just been 2 years. What is the U.S. long-term vision for dealing with COVID-19? Will it eventually be endemic to the U.S., but weakened with proper vaccinations and effective treatments? Now, first of all, having as much of the population immune to the virus via vaccine is certainly ideal. Breakthrough cases after vaccination do exist, but are usually far, far milder. So going forward, tracking case numbers may not be the best metric to evaluate COVID-19 severity in a certain area of the country. Instead, identifying the main priorities to handle COVID-19 is where this resolution begins. What will be most important to prevent and what metrics we will use to measure that are what we should consider. It may not be transmission and case rates, rather hospitalizations and deaths that come into focus. The lack of goal setting and direction from a national standpoint has led to strange policies and patterns across the country. We have fallen into a pattern that shows most areas with high vaccination rates have tighter restrictions and areas with lower vaccination rates have looser restrictions, which is very counterintuitive. Furthermore, finding a balance of restrictions and acceptable risk will be important, as in if COVID-19 begins to spike in an area, what restrictions are appropriate to balance all aspects of life versus risk of the virus? Some California Bay Area counties have already set long-term goals to regulate indoor mask mandates. The metrics include moderate community transmission for 3 weeks, hospitalizations that are low and stable, and 80% of the community is vaccinated, or it has been 8 weeks since the vaccine has been allowed for children ages 5 to 11. Continuing to make sure that those who are at higher risk for severe COVID-19 will remain a high priority. Furthermore, the push to vaccinate these groups will remain key as the country begins to adapt to living with the virus. Setting a long-term goal to handle the COVID-19 pandemic will be a key step to learning how to live with the virus going forward. Hopefully, a national strategic plan will give us much-needed guidance in the coming months.
America's public health leaders focus too much on the individual. The pandemic revealed major flaws in our nation's health infrastructure. According to The Atlantic, these flaws were due to a shift in focus among public health leaders as long as 100 years ago. At the start of the 20th century, the field of public health was much larger. It was a mix of medical doctors, social activists, and industrialists focused on social reform. In fact, most early public health experts believed that the central issue of the field was that social problems like poverty made some Americans more susceptible to illness. In order to address these issues, these experts identified problem areas like overcrowded housing, dilapidated living facilities, and unsafe working conditions that needed to be addressed.
The Atlantic says that the field changed pretty dramatically when one major scientific discovery was made, germ theory, which states that infectious diseases are caused by microbes. This discovery meant that many public health leaders decided to stop prioritizing issues of equity and began focusing on curing individual instances of disease. Experts began to think of early public health issues as a matter of plumbing and infrastructure, and that was no longer necessary.
Wow. This meant that much of public health research and development began happening in labs, and the diversity and size of the field dwindled. Unfortunately, this also meant that social activists and anyone without a degree in public health was counted out of the conversation as the field began to seek the same exclusivity and esteem as, at the time, the budding field of medicine. Instead of public health leaders being agents of reform as they were previously, they began to consider themselves as objective observers.
It's an interesting piece, huh?
Very interesting.
Certainly a lot to kind of think about.
Right. Cheap antidepressant could be used for COVID treatment. The New York Times reports that a large clinical trial conducted in the US, Canada, and Brazil has found that a cheaply made antidepressant could be a promising treatment for COVID-19. The drug called fluvoxamine was found to reduce the need for hospitalization by 1/3 of Brazil and 2/3 in a study at large. Some patients involved in the study struggled to handle the dosage, so more research is needed to properly titrate the treatment, but early results have been promising. One patient given fluvoxamine died, while 12 patients given the placebo died.
The studies on fluvoxamine thus far have focused on how effective the drug is at reducing the need for prolonged hospitalization and